This episode of SolarWinds Tech Pod is brought to you by ThwackCamp, a worldwide virtual IT event. Register for free at thwackcamp.com.
Welcome to SolarWinds Tech Pod. I'm the host for this episode, Kevin Sparenberg, and we had so much to talk about in our last episode about future-proofing IT that I invited the guests back for a second session. With us today is Jez Marsh, founder of Silverback Systems.
Hey, Kev.
And Brad Klein, director of IT here at SolarWinds.
Hey, Kev. How you doing?
Doing all right. So last time we talked about future-proofing, really more where it talked about hardware and software and vendor requirements and making sure you go out and speak to the people about how you do future-proofing. But I wanted to kind of, I'm not going to say turn that conversation on its head, but I want to change it by a couple degrees. What about future-proofing yourself in your IT career? Because a lot of us have dealt with infrastructure changes or technology shifts or these things. So what is future-proofing for your career mean for you guys?
Well, far be it for me to parrot what I said last time, but again, it's flexibility. For me, I was a Microsoft man, as I said last episode, but I was the person who was looking after the monitoring tool left, and it just happened to be Orion. And they said, who wants to volunteer to look after it? And it was like, me, I'm fed up looking after Exchange, I'll do it. And that pretty much, that decision there is basically what got me here, because I was decided to be fluid and take a different direction rather than just specializing in just one thing. My take on it is you've got to try and keep yourself relevant, but also you need to enjoy it.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, passion is definitely a huge part of this career. I mean, I think that goes for a lot of careers, right? But one where it's constantly changing and evolving, you have to be excited by it. You have to be excited by the new changes in technology, what's coming down the pike. If not, you're not going to be able to dedicate that time because, I mean, we all work. We all have our other things that, you know, occupy a lot of our time. And you're going to have to cut out a little bit of that in order to stay up to date with everything that's coming around the next turn, you know?
Okay. So before we talk about kind of watching the bleeding edge, and it applies here as well. There is a lot of discussion around new tech, whether it's cloud-based services or new ways to do hyper-converged infrastructure. There's new things you kind of keep on top of. And for me, and this is going back a couple of years, but for me, one of the things we used to look for people was certifications. Do they have a certification? And does that mean this person is qualified to do the job? And I mean that in the nicest way possible, because I don't know what you guys have seen, but I've seen in the industry a person with a laundry list of certifications, and on paper, they look great, and they can't troubleshoot themselves out of a wet paper bag. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I mean, I've seen both. I've seen amazing talent that had no certs. They were so busy and so deep into the tech and just had such a lust for that that they never had time or never took the time to go and get the certs. And probably because their career was growing and advancing with their passion around it. And, I mean, I've seen others with a ton of certs that also, right, they had an amazing skill set and they applied that and combined it with certs. And then there's a third where I've seen a stack of certs like you talked about and couldn't get out of paperback.
Yeah, the straw man of IT.
Really? Seems a good way to put it. Now, it's one of those things that we talk about continuing your education and making sure you're up on new tech. Make sure you're up to date on your existing tech. Make sure you have that forward-looking vantage. And some of that, you kind of have to pick and choose though, don't you? Like, what do I want to spend my time on? Is it something that excites me for me? Is it something that excites me for business? Is it something that my boss told me I need to care about?
That's a dangerous place to be in, right? If you get told you need to learn something, in my experience.
Are you that stubborn? Huh? Are you stubborn that way?
No. He started his own business.
No, that's true. I mean,
he's got to be a bit stubborn.
I mean, you've got to back yourself. And you also have to believe in what you're doing, mm-hmm. Which can be a double-edged sword, because if you're employed, right, and you're working for somebody else and they say, okay, we need some more XYZ to keep, you know, ABC partnership next year, mm-hmm. But you don't enjoy it, not only are you potentially going to fail to try and get this certification you've been asked for, but it won't stick because you don't love it.
You're not going to live it.
Yeah.
Okay. I can see that. So the tail end of that one, though, is how do you choose? And I mean this because I, for one, and Jez, like you, we came from, I didn't realize our backgrounds were so close. We did exchange and then we did monitoring. Monitoring requires more of an IT generalist. So, and the one thing certs always seem to me, depending on, you know, which stack of certs you have, is you've specialized in things. So open up to the room here, is the way future for most IT careers and for you guys in specific, is that more IT generalization or IT specialization?
That is a tough call. And that, I think that's a flip of a coin almost. It really depends on, I think it depends on where your passion is and where you really want to build your career, right? Because let's say take networking, right? A network engineer. Those guys definitely, certs pretty much a part of their life, right? I mean, you're kind of setting your different tiers, and Cisco has really done a good job in the industry of making their certs, you know, very well respected and very indicative of the level of the person, right? But I have seen people at that top tier, you know, amazingly, that have been through the troubleshooting and have CCIE and all that amazing body of work there, and are not the best practical kind of engineers. Now, they're great engineers. They know the CCIE world and they know everything at Cisco, but they're not thinking outside of that bubble, right? If it's in the book, they know how to do it. But if it's not, they really don't. And I've seen the other, right? I've seen guys with that cert that are just incredible. Generalists can go everywhere, jump from Microsoft over to Cisco. So it's really tough to really, I think, pinpoint or really put that in a bottle as far as real clean of what it's indicative of. But you really have to fill that out with people. As far as career planning from that standpoint, it comes down to you, I really think, as far as your passion and where you want to go, because you can take a minimal cert and you can almost take a no cert and you can run a great career in IT if you're a really good engineer and really good worker. And you can have a whole dozen certs and not get hired, you know, or not really go anywhere, you know. So it really depends, I think, on your passion and how you apply it. But a cert, yes, no, and specialization, yes, no, is going to be really hard for us to put in a box in 20, yeah. 25 minutes here.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of depends, right, which is a really weak answer to that
Everyone
question.
Hates it depends, but that's why we have these kinds of things so we can discuss it out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, one of the most gifted network engineers I ever met didn't have a single certificate, mm-hmm. right? But he had such a broad knowledge of networking, not just Cisco, Paolo as well, that he literally was making serious money doing this because he was that good. Mm-hmm. And he never struggled to find another contract. He never struggled to, continue to keep relevant, because what he did was basically he had a passion for networking.
Yeah.
And so he read the blogs. He read the white papers. He had his own lab. I'm not entirely sure where he got the firmware from, having no certificates, but he had his own lab. But by the same token, he went in for an employed position instead of a consultant's job, he would have struggled, because a lot of people still today are looking for those badges, right? Mm-hmm. But not necessarily because they want those badges because they think their person's good, but because it goes towards their partnership. Right. And I think that's the downside of certification, is that it's not necessarily used by businesses for picking out good talent. It sometimes people are hired simply because they got that badge that's rare and they need it.
They need to fill a quota.
Yeah.
To maintain a partnership of some kind.
Exactly.
It seems a lot of box checking for the sake of box checking. But you bring up an interesting point. If that guy was hired on somewhere as an internal employee, and then the company said, you know what, you're great at networking and you've helped us architect everything, and next year we're going to SDN, and all of a sudden that is a complete change. Did he specialize himself out of a job? Now, not that guy specifically, but the network engineer, it's grumbling I've heard for about 4 or 5 years now at conferences. It's like, you know, the companies hate network engineers. That's why we're doing software defined networking, so programmers can be network engineers. And I shake my head at the idea. I think that might be like a 20-year plan, not that we get rid of network engineers, but that they learn new skills. But is it something that concerns you looking at the landscape ahead? Like, because SDN is still a relatively young. Is that even the right word to use? It's
nascent.
Yeah, it's not as prevalent as running Cisco gear at your edge or running your infrastructure on still separate, you know, storage versus compute versus networking. You know, is it something that we've got to worry about?
Yeah, I mean, we're facing the same revolution as we did with VMware, right? I remember back in the mid 2000s, right? We were first looking at virtualization, and the biggest thing that my boss at the time, my leaders at the time, they a little older school than I was, you know, they were extremely concerned and just horrified of the concept that if one piece of hardware goes down, I lose 5 boxes or 10 or 15, yeah, however dense your cluster was, right?
That was me at the time too.
Yeah,
I mean, the newfangled virtualization stuff is too scary.
In one basket.
I mean, I was all excited about it because I had my data center sitting there with all these things running at 5%, you know, and it made amazing sense, right? But from their standpoint, and also a bit from mine, you know, there was being the guy that was going to get called at 2 a.m. when things went down.
To repair 5 machines, not one.
Yeah, exactly, right? There was some definite fear there, right? I think that's where we're at, or at least that's where I feel I'm at. Maybe I'm behind or whatever, but that's where I feel I'm at. Whenever we look at SDN, I have a little fear of the thought of like one piece of hardware sitting out there and I've got my firewall, I've got my edge, I've got my core all sitting on this one piece of hardware. But then I look at the potential for savings and return to service and failover and, you know, our return to operational time and all that stuff. It seems like it's going to be a no-brainer. There's going to be some hiccups on the way because we had the same thing as we bumped through VMware in the beginning.
Yeah. It's like, do you want to get involved in that right now when later on it could end up being – they could go somewhere else. Or it could be another way. I mean, this could be the way it is right now, but some clever person at MIT might come up with something which supersedes all that. But that's always a risk, right? Mm-hmm. If you wait too long, you risk being obsolete. Like we said in the last episode with the infrastructure getting too old – it's a tough one. I mean, you just need to make the right decision for you and try not to let other people's pressures make the decision for you.
Yeah. From a career standpoint, I think that's the key. And then you are going to, you know, let's say you love your company and everything else, and potentially that guy they were talking about as a hypothetical before, let's say SD-WAN's coming and he decides he doesn't want to embrace SD-WAN or SDN. So that's where he has to make the call of, do I want to stay this course with this company potentially, or do I want to go somewhere that still respects and is still running, you know, old school hardware, going back to COBOL that we're joking about before, right? So that I think is definitely a personal choice, but I think for full career life cycle, you know, everyone that I've seen really maintain and stay, even fully really specialized people, they're always specializing, right? They're never specialized and stop. I mean, IT is not a rest, you know, career, right? It is one where you're continuously learning. There's never an end to school. And so I think that's kind of one of the key points with IT and being in this world is you can specialize, sure, but tomorrow you're going to most likely be specializing in something new.
Yeah. It's like you said, Kev, you don't want somebody to specialize themselves out of a job because they've decided to be inflexible in the new technologies and thinking, oh, well, that's never going to happen. But you can't afford to do that. You've got to be aware of it. You've got to know at least the entry level of the new technologies so that you continue to be relevant. So if somebody brings it up in a conversation, you kind of can at least have an informed opinion on something. Mm-hmm.
Even if that opinion is, we're not ready for that yet.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's you've got to be flexible. I keep saying it, but I honestly believe that's key.
Yeah. Well, that you got to be flexible. You have to expand your knowledge. You've both hinted that you've got to basically make time for yourself to learn. This is going to be a sticky question. Is it in the best interest of your career to have your company give you a little bit of that time, pay for the trainings, pay for the certs, help you out with that? Or is it something you need to take on for yourself?
Well, I mean, It's always great when somebody else pays the bill and gives you the time, right? I mean, that's always the best. I mean, it depends on your culture and everything else. And luckily, I mean, you know, I've been lucky to be in a lot of companies that, that did believe in that and were helping out the pros to stay relevant. You don't always see it, though, you know, and that's where you have to decide, is are you the right place or are you willing to do this, you know, in the time that you have out of your personal time to make these things happen? Hopefully you've got a supportive management team that's helping you reach those goals.
Yeah, it's a balance. Right. You need to support what the business is asking you to learn. But you also need to be brave enough to say, right, okay, that's great, but I'd like to go and learn this instead, you know, without pigeonholing yourself into something. So, yeah, again, it's a balancing act, a career in IT.
Well, it's a trade-off.
Yeah.
How much of your career growth do you put on your own shoulders? How much do you let your organization define for you? I'll be honest, I didn't want to learn any more about Exchange after I was handed Exchange. I was done with it. But I continued to learn because they needed someone to fill that role. And so I went out, I took the classes, I went to the Global Knowledge, and I sat down for the week-long seminars on upgrades and all that stuff. And I ended up really advancing my knowledge and found other stuff I loved and I built on that. But that was self-directed. My company gave me the first start, and then I was able to choose my path after that. And it was tricky. We were a very small team, and I'm sure both you guys work with insanely large teams, Jez being the only employee. So I'm sure you work with insanely large teams where there's plenty of time for everyone to get everything done and then some. Or am I speaking out of class? Because I've always been told do more with less, less people, less resources, less budget. And that's when we looked into things like automation and CI/CD. And for me, was power shelling as much as humanly possible. You know, do you have to make it a personal priority to stay relevant technology wise? Considering most IT is do more with less.
Yeah, I mean, I've been around this game for a little over 24 years now, and I have yet to be someplace where we had too many people and not enough work to do.
Typically the opposite?
Yeah, I mean, it's generally the opposite. And you're always looking for a way to automate, and you're always looking for a way to get that time back. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's where it comes down to. You have to be able to work with your management team to get that time, you know, and hopefully it's a company policy, you know, but if not, you know, it's hopefully not frowned on, and at least your management is helping support you. Because if not, you know, you're going to be doing that on your time. And when I did my first, you know, a couple of certs, I was doing them at home in the evenings, you know, but I was a single guy back then, you know, and I was young in my 20s. And I was, you know, I had the time, you know. Now, you know, I would be hard pressed to find that time. The wife wouldn't let me be, you know, sitting there for a couple hours every night, you know, studying a book.
Yeah, I have the same issue at home. Although the wife does support, the kids not so much.
Books, doesn't she?
Huh?
She has to support you. She's doing the books.
Yeah, well, you know, we went to France this year. She's got to make sure we can afford that, right?
Understood. Okay.
It's the kids. They and the cat.
Yes. You mentioned the cat earlier. Wherever you're trying to do anything, it's immediately on the keyboard.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the number of times I've been sat on either on a Skype conversation or even on podcasts like this one, and the cat's walked across my keyboard and muted me, and I didn't know. So I'm sat there going, blah, 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 thinking I'm sounding amazing.
I'm sorry, nobody I'm not catching you right now.
but nobody can hear me. And it's, you got to love families, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but...
That's why you do it all.
Yes. And this, although not specifically part of what we're talking about, really ties back to your work-life balance as well. Because I, for one, at my last company, was on call 24/7, 365, as one member of a 7-person network team responsible for all of the sites in North and South America.
Mm-hmm.
Like 39 or 40 sites.
Wow.
And me and one other guy knew Exchange. And I was in Baltimore and he was in San Diego and we were both named Kevin. So it was East Coast Kevin and West Coast Kevin. So anything that had to do with...
Sounds like a rap band.
Kevin, coast to coast.
We had battles. So anything... But I got called... This is no lie. I got called 3 Christmases in a row.
Yeah.
While sitting at my folks' house, ready to open presents, and my wife said, you maybe need to start finding something else. And for me, that was choosing where to spend my time to learn more. Now, for me, that was PowerShell, and it helped me a lot. And, of course, I dove headlong into the monitoring stuff because it put me in contact with a lot of the other teams so I could determine where I wanted to spend my time. You know, was it pure networking? Was it systems management at a larger scale? Was it enterprise-level hardware and troubleshooting that? Was it the storage stuff? So having those conversations allowed me to determine my career goal because I actually had a chance to talk to those teams.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, life changes, right? Mm-hmm. What you can do when you're in your 20s and you're unattached, you can't do when you have a wife and kids, you know, or a partner and kids mm-hmm. to look after. And, you know, my wife is really, really supportive because as the principal consultant for my business and having customers that are based in the States, mm-hmm. Sometimes I have to work late at night because of the time difference to interface with the relevant teams to get the jobs done. It comes back to being flexible again. If you're lucky enough to find somebody who allows you to be flexible, you've got a much better chance of being successful than if you have somebody who isn't. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit out of scope of this conversation.
It is, but
it's a good life lesson.
Yeah, it is a great life lesson. I think some of us had to learn it the hard way. I know I went through stuff like that, career choices specifically. But we've talked a lot about specialization and making sure you go down a path, you choose a path. Does the organization matter a lot in that? Like, if you have a team, you've got management, and that supervisor has 20 people working for them, and you say 5 are network engineers, 5 are system engineers, 5 are database people, and 5 are emerging technologies or what have you. Are you pigeonholing yourself, or are you have too many people responsible? And if you over-specialize, I will not lie, there was a guy at my last company who knew the wireless. And when I say he knew the wireless, he knew everything about the wireless. So if there's a problem with wireless, he was the one we had to call. And when he left the company, we had no one to call.
That's really tough from not only a corporate perspective, you know, how do you manage that of having like one person that knows that thing, but also from your career perspective, right? You're talking about getting into a pigeonholed spot, right? Let's say he's an amazing wireless guy at the company. What happens if, you know, the company goes away from wireless for whatever reason that may be, decides it's too big of a security risk or some craziness, decides to move away from it? Well, if he only knows wireless, he doesn't know a little bit of something else. Yeah, or just change
his name before.
Yeah, go to Aruba, to Aerohive, to 15 others, right? That's definitely, I think that's a place. But in general, right, majority of the people I've worked with in IT, I've maybe run into one or two. They've a lot of times have come up through a certain career path. You know, they've been a generalist, they specialized, and then they kind of stayed in that vein, you know, of a general kind of systems or network or UC type person. Where we have the blur now is with SD-WAN and some of the other technologies we talked about previously is with the network team, you know, looking at the team that I have here is excellent guys, amazing engineers, very, very Cisco focused. They've learned in a lot of the other technologies. When it comes to SDN and that type of setup, how is their skill and their world going to change? They're going to need to start understanding virtualization technologies and different OSs and a lot of different things. No doubt all the engineers I work with will be able to ace that, no problem, be able to roll with that. But it is, if I was in their position, if I look back 10 years or 15 years of my career and was a focused Cisco guy, I'm trying to think and put myself in their shoes daily, you know, how scared or would I be scared of those things coming and how would I prepare for it? Because it's definitely something as a manager of trying to understand how to prep them for it and get them ready for it and get them amenable to the change and moving away from a platform that they may have been really attached to. You know, I joke a little bit about the Cisco tattoos, you know, but it definitely comes when you pour that your lifeblood into learning a thing and reading these bound volumes. You know,
they're such page turners.
They're amazing.
I have a lot of them.
You get kind of attached.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one. I think it's a really thing that everybody has to think about from a career perspective is how are you going back to Jez's point of how can you stay flexible and how can you be ready for that next thing? You just can't get too attached to any one tech or any one knowledge piece that you've learned. You're never going to be the guy that knows it all.
No, I mean, in a way, we've got virtualization 2.0 with Docker and containers. You know, there's a lot of people who, you know, are in the same position as we were going back 15 years ago or whatever it was, where, you know, the hypervisors first came out and people like, eh. Like you said earlier, Brad, you know, do I want to do that because of, you know, putting all my eggs in one basket? And then you've got the container stuff, which is, again, it's kind of miniaturization of VM. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are starting to think about, you know, do I move from VMware to this instead? Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the glory of IT. There's always something cool to learn, but it can be a bit scary.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I love about IT, and I think we all have, and we've mentioned it before, is that there is that next new thing. Now, that next new thing may be, you know, a flash in the pan and gone, and it's like, yeah, that never materialized. But enough of those things come to fruition that you're like, yeah, I should have started looking at that sooner. I probably should have been on board. I was the guy that fought virtualization for almost a year. I'm like, no, don't virtualize my stuff. I've got to do all these things and all this stuff. And I did all this stuff and I read the documents and they don't want, and I realized I turned into that guy that was like in the basement complaining that they moved off COBOL.
having a tantrum.
Yeah.
I don't wanna.
Yeah, I want it. I have to have it. And I realized that you talked about being flexible. That's the time when I realized I was being inflexible to the possible detriment of my career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to be brittle.
Yep. And I finally sucked it up and I no joke, took the guy who knew the most about virtualization the way we were setting up, and we had dinner and drinks. And I said, sell me on this. Don't sell me on the business. Don't tell me that kind of stuff. I don't need you to tell me dollars and cents. Sell me on the tech.
Yeah.
And we had a conversation because he was the one who took that time to read up on that. Well, I was the one still reading the old documents. And he said, here's where your information is diverging from what actually is happening.
Yeah. Why should I be excited about this? Mm-hmm. Sell it to me.
Yeah.
Like I want to stay on my on-prem. Change my mind.
Yeah.
I've gotten attached to a lot of technology that you just had to turn around and walk away from, right? And going to the point of on-prem, right? That was a bit of a thing. You know, I first looked at cloud as it's just a new buzzword for outsourcing, right? Mm-hmm. I'm moving what it would have been a skill set that we had in-house that we had control of out to somebody else's data center.
We're already doing that. It's called a remote data center, a no-hands data center, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, this is the same thing. We're just putting a different label on it and calling it a different thing. But when it came down to it, right, there's a certain level of time and everything else that you're getting back by moving into that environment, particularly like, let's say it moved to 365 or G Suite or one of those, right? Okay, well, now my Exchange guys, they may have been a little scared about it in the beginning, but now they realize how much time they had back that they're going and learning other things, and they're able to pivot their careers to other things. To your point of being kind of stuck on Exchange and ready for a new thing, they're able to do that now, and they're able to learn new stuff. And so it definitely comes to being agile and flexible in your job.
Yeah. But even though we've been talking about future-proofing, the one thing about the cloud, which I keep reminding people, is that it still runs on kit.
Yeah.
Right? It's not some ephemeral thing that lives up in the clouds,
as
literally.
Every time there's an outage.
Yeah. There's always going to be somebody who needs to, you know, schluck around the data center and fix something if it goes wrong.
You still got Bob down there swapping out hard drives when they blow. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So we're starting to run out of time, but one last question. We've kind of hinted around about, succinctly, what advice would you give to people trying to future-proof their career?
I know Jazz's.
Yeah. You can't be blinkered, right? You need to accept change because it's going to happen. But you need to be excited about the direction you take. If it's pushed on you by somebody else, you either need to accept that and get excited about what you've been asked to learn, or you need to have the strength to say to that company or that boss or whatever, no, but what about this? Mm-hmm. You know, give yourself options before you become inflexible.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I definitely went to it a little bit earlier, but it's that desire to learn. It's that being excited about tech, and then it's figuring it out within your ecosystem, your management environment, everything else, how you can learn the new thing, how you can provide time, free up time within your daily schedule to learn and move on to that new piece of tech. It's, you always have to be forward facing and be excited by what's coming, not scared of what's coming.
Yeah. Because it's coming, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me. That has been SolarWinds Tech Pod. I really want to thank again Jez Marsh from Silverback Systems and Brad Klein from SolarWinds IT. And we'll look forward to speaking to you next time.
Yep, you're very welcome. Kevin.
Thank you all for joining our podcast. And don't forget to register for THWACK Camp. Learn the latest in IT from SolarWinds head geeks and IT pros like you. View this year's schedule at thwackcamp.com.